This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Hey, welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie's not here today. She's on vacation. She will be back on Monday. We're on the Civic Media Radio Network. You can join our conversation at 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Matt Rothschild, I used to be the editor at the Progressive Magazine and was the executive director at the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. And there I got to know Angela Lang a little bit, and she's my co-host again today. My favorite guest co-host. She's the founder and executive director of BLOC. That's Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. Angela, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with me.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me. Happy Friday.
Yeah. Hope you have a nice weekend. I hope everyone has a nice weekend. We need to relax and regroup. I just wanted to let you know, Angela, and let our listeners know that Luke Mathers here at Civic Media just posted my latest podcast, the Wisconsin Forward podcast. It's entitled How Racism Infects Wisconsin Politics. And you've got a couple cameos in there. And Earl Ingram does most of the heavy lifting. But I think it's a really interesting look at this problem that doesn't get enough attention in our state and in our politics. And it's a real deep dive. Earl gets real personal about his personal life and growing up in Wisconsin and what it means to be a man of his age, which is roughly my age, a little older, dealing with racism his whole life, and then seeing Trump elected again, and racism playing a role in that, and just what it means to him and how kind of devastating it is. And so it's a very interesting examination, also an examination of deindustrialization in Milwaukee and what happened in Milwaukee because of that, and how it really took out a lot of the middle class of the Black community, which had the strongest middle class of any city in the country, he told me at one point. Yep. And so it's really well worth a look. That you can all catch that at civicmedia.us. It's on the homepage there. The podcast is called Wisconsin Forward, and this one's called How Racism Infects Wisconsin Politics. I'm excited about our show today, Angela. We're trying to get Christine Newman Ortiz on. She's the executive director and founder of Voces de la Frontera, the great immigrant rights organization here in Wisconsin. And then at the half hour break, as soon as we come back, one of the leading left wing union activists and intellectuals, Bill Fletcher Jr., is going to come on. He's written about Trump and fascism recently, and I want to explore that because, you know, we could spend all day talking about this appointment, that appointment, you know, whichever charade is happening in the Trump clown car, but really the ultimate task we have before us is how are we going to combat Trumpism, fascism, and so we're going to dive deeply into that. And then just to give you an idea of the political breadth of the show, after the 3 o'clock hour, we've got former Governor Scott McCallum, a Republican, an old friend of mine. I used to play basketball with Scott at noontime. Nice. At the noontime game, which was a mixed political game for about 20 years, 25 years. And so I've remained friends with Scott, and I'm glad he's going to join the show too. And then in the last half hour, you might have to take the lead because we're going to talk about deep canvassing. And I know you've done some deep canvassing, and Steve Bauer, who's one of the leaders of the Jefferson County Dems and has been doing it real steadily there in Jefferson County with a great group of local activists. They're trying to make a difference, actually are making a difference in outcomes in Jefferson County, which is a reddish county. And the thing about red counties, blue counties, you know, there's no such thing really, because in every county, right, even the so-called reddest county in Wisconsin, there are a lot of great activists on the Democratic side. And similarly, in Dane County, you know, there are a lot of people who voted Republican, too. So, you know, this is it's a misnomer just to slap a label on a county as though everyone in that county is one color. And so we need to get beyond that. How has your week gone, Angela?
It was good. You know, Tuesday was our first or my first day back in the office. And it was good to be back, just kind of feeling the energy of the team. I think we're all still moving a little more slowly than usual. But on Wednesday, for Wellness Wednesday, we usually take a bit of a moment to kind of check in with each other and bring in some food and kind of have a good time. And our deputy director, Keisha, she said she put everyone's name in a bowl and pass it around. And whoever's name you drew, you had to say something nice about them. So, you know, I think folks are slowly, I think, getting back in the swing of things, but we're excited for our toy drive. We actually just pushed out signups today. So our team has been texting and phone banking for, you know, folks in our community and our contacts that may need toys at the end of the year. So we're switching gears and we're excited to do some of that non-electoral stuff now.
And at the turn of the new year, are you guys going to jump back into this Wisconsin Supreme Court race, or what are you going to be doing?
Yeah, we have a state Supreme Court race again. We'll have another state Supreme Court race the year after that. And I think a couple years back to back, we're in spring Supreme Court races. So that should be, you know, it's important for us to make sure that the community knows what's at stake. I think now more than ever, people kind of feel the impacts of a Supreme Court, maybe more than they did before. And to do that education on doors is really important. And yeah, we also have the superintendent, Jill Underly, is running for re-election as well. So we'll be keeping an eye on both of those things. We'll make sure to get the word out, especially when there's, you know, some voter fatigue happening now. And, you know, spring elections tend to be lower turnout just more normally. So I think it'll be a little bit of an uphill battle to try and get folks to reengage around an election after what just happened a few weeks ago, honestly.
And you have to combat exhaustion, too, and depression. I mean, exhaustion just because since 2010. It's been an unrelenting one campaign after another here in Wisconsin with really high stakes every time. Yeah. And so it's hard to recover and get the energy back to get back in the arena. But I'm sure we all will. I have a hunch about the spring election that there'll be so many Democrats and progressives wanting to express their disgust that Trump got back into the White House, that this will be their first public effort to display their disgust, and they'll flock to the polls and help get Susan Crawford onto the Wisconsin Supreme Court against the odious Brad Schimmel, who, you know, comes across as an arrogant jerk anyway. And Republicans keep putting up arrogant jerks. At some point, they're going to have to figure out that's not a winning strategy.
Wasn't it Brad Schimmel when he was AG? He had the coins. He like bought these coins for his office. That was him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that I think speaks to the arrogance. I think it also, especially from a more fiscal standpoint of a Republican Party, I don't feel like that's a good use of taxpayer dollars. So interesting that he got those coins for himself. But yeah, I think it'll be important to make sure that people still know what is what's happening, what's on the ballot. And I think it's very easy that an election like this could fly under the radar, unfortunately. So I think getting folks to start talking about it now and trying to re-engage, especially when people are kind of tapped out a little bit.
Yeah. So this is an election for the Wisconsin Supreme Court in April. And again, it will decide the balance, the ideological balance of that court.
Now, again,
yeah, we've had some really good rulings coming out of the Wisconsin Supreme Court finally over the last year. And, you know, that might change if Susan Crawford loses the election. So it is a really important kind of pivotal election. We saw really important cases coming down. The abortion case was one.
Yeah.
You know, Fair Maps was another. Megan Wolf just this week. Megan Wolf, the great administrator over the Wisconsin Elections Commission, who has been demonized something awful by the Republicans and taken all sorts of grief. And she's just a great public servant. And you know, they've been after her from day one, practically, since 2020 anyway, with no evidence whatsoever just more propaganda about the so-called stolen election.
Yep.
And, you know, we saw more of that nonsense coming out of Eric Hovde here. You know, the guy, again, you know, some of these Republicans, their worst spoiled sports you ever seen, keeps repeating propaganda about how votes come in. It's at the central count in Milwaukee, when we all know that happens. That's how it works. That's how it's supposed to work.
I mean, but also, one, how many days was it before he actually finally conceded? Way too many days. I don't even know how many, but it was like well over a week and he finally had conceded. But what's interesting is that this like whole central count narrative, oh, there's this midnight ballot dump in Milwaukee. And if you understand the sheer volume of ballots that need to be counted, you understand why they get counted very late. And so I think what's interesting is that Democrats have pushed forward a bill in the legislature, because the reason that is the case is that there is a state statute or state law that says that ballots can't be opened until election day. Now, Democrats try to push a bill to get that changed so ballots could actually be opened earlier. And so if you are opening ballots earlier, then you won't have those midnight dumps. But who is actually preventing it? Republicans. So it's just interesting that they're preventing the thing that they keep complaining about, because once you actually change that, then they no longer have this like narrative to lean on in terms of trying to undermine the integrity of the election.
Right, because the appearance is so useful to their little propaganda game.
Yep.
And, you know, other states have solved this problem. Other states now allow their clerks to start counting the absentee ballots the day before, a couple days before, I think, but not in Wisconsin. Maybe now with the new, less gerrymandered legislature, we can hope that a sensible bill like that, it did have some bipartisan support, but it got squashed.
It did, yeah. It's worth noting that there were some Republicans. I don't think there were any, but there was at least a couple that I know that had signed on, which I think is worth noting.
I mean, that's one of the things I'm hoping we'll be able to push through, or attempt to push through, at least get good hearings on. The problem with the gerrymandered legislature, we couldn't even get hearings on most of the good bills that Democrats were proposing. We're just not given any occasion to speak our mind on really important issues. So maybe we can get that. Maybe we can get medical marijuana. You know, we're late to the party there. I mean, we're surrounded by states that have legalized not just medical marijuana, but recreational use.
And the so tax revenue, we're missing out on
just,
that.
It's just a joke that we're so backward.
Our schools have to go to referendum for funding, and then we have this opportunity, and we're not doing it.
Yeah, I'm hoping we can get more funding for schools, too. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Matt Rothschild. She's Angela Lang. We're your co-hosts this afternoon. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
The crops are all in and the peaches are rotten. The oranges are packed in. The creosote dump.
Hey, Matt Rothschild here, subbing in for Maggie on the Maggie Dawn Show. She'll be back on Monday right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. And I'm delighted to have my usual guest host, Angela Lang, with me. Angela is the founder and executive director of BLOC, Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. That was Johnny Cash singing the old Woody Guthrie song, Deportee. And we have Christine Newman Ortiz is joining us in a second. And Christine is the founder and executive director of Voces de la Frontera, the great immigrant rights advocacy group here in Wisconsin. Christine, can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, yeah. I'm wondering how you're doing, Christine, because you know better than I do that Donald Trump ran a racist campaign with full-throated anti-immigrant bigotry and scapegoating, which must have felt like you're and your members are right in the crosshairs. How are you doing?
Resolute, very disappointed in the blindness of people to really consider what, you know, what his administration will mean to themselves and to others, because he really, you know, he's a con man, and he's conned people into believing he's on the side of working people. He's scapegoated immigrants. You know, he's built an administration, past and now present, bigger than before, that is just for the billionaires, for the large corporations. He's going to continue to scapegoat immigrants, but everyone's going to feel, you know, the impact, the consequences of kind of these immoral efforts at mass deportation that are going to have not just, you know, I think bring up, you know, I believe, you know, an outpouring, and we're organizing for an outpouring of solidarity and resistance. But also, you know, when you a really big destabilizing impact, you know, people worried about the cost of their food. Well, you bet when 80% of the workforce is undocumented and produces dairy, 1 in 10 jobs depend on it. You bet there's a consequence when, you know, with such low unemployment, immigrants have been holding up the economy. And unfortunately, and this is really something that, you know, was a problem with the Democratic Party as well. They didn't really challenge that frame on immigrants, and I think that just moved things farther and farther to the right. So I just think, you know, when you have the attacks on Social Security that are coming, the attacks on Medicare, the attacks on public schools, this kind of immoral separation of families and mass deportation efforts, you know, I think, you know, I basically feel like getting ready for a big storm. I'm getting ready for a big storm with others around me. And we've been here before. It is going to be a bigger storm because there's no one holding him back in these agencies that he's creating. And a lot is going to have to depend on what can be done at the local level, at the state level, and a lot of solidarity and resistance.
In what kind of solidarity and resistance are you planning or hoping for those of us who are supporters to engage in?
You know, one of the things that we're doing is setting up regional meetings. We've already had them, you know, Green Bay, Milwaukee, Sparta, Arcadia, where we've been, you know, building consensus around, and it's unanimous so far, like with a lot of our members, around standing up a lot of the organizational structures we had before under the Trump administration, because we do anticipate that in the first 100 days, he's going to pull away all of the executive orders, such as enforcement priorities, making everyone deportable, trying to put pressure on, you know, local governments or law enforcement to just be an arm of immigration, to profile, to, you know, disregard everything and just kind of serve that purpose, and with threats of pulling funding. And so what we're asking is for folks to kind of find a home in these different organizational structures. So one of them is, for example, you know, helping to stand up what have become known as like sanctuary policies that basically affirm, you know, that we are a welcoming community, that, you know, we value the diversity of who we are. We value the contributions that immigrants make. We value their humanity, that we stand with each other, with families. And so, and then just having protocols around, you know, immigration, so that immigration doesn't, so like in schools, that was a very important work, where they were considered like, they can be named different things, safe zones, welcoming zones, but you had policies in place where, you know, there's standards around how, you know, immigration in and around the school. You know, like saying, well, we don't want immigration inside the school or around the school. If parents are dropping their kids off, you know, there has to be a protocol along when you go in, who you direct yourself. You know, do you have a judicial warrant for a person in particular? We're not going to just put a minor there to engage, you know, or be detained. So having those protocols in place and celebrating them publicly. So in different spaces, at city government, at in different, you know, hospitals could do them, because I'm sure that, you know, all of these like sensitive locations where that had been one under Obama, kind of one back under Biden, will be stripped away again. And I think, you know, we're helping people. So there's ways in, like, you know, how can people at a citizen level, you know, help with that? Another thing is I think a very important protection is it's a kind of an uphill battle. But I think given the context, the reality that's going to happen, and that we have smaller margins to win at the state level, you know, in terms of differences between candidates, we have a state legislature that is now more accountable, that's going to feel that pressure more. And if you combine the movement power with, like, this legislative effort, we want to, you know, try to win, restore driver's licenses in Wisconsin. We had it for decades. Mm-hmm. It was taken away in 2007. And, you know, so that a Social Security number is not a barrier. That's very important. So for people to really weigh in and help build out this grassroots coalition for safe roads, lobbying, and, you know, even engaging Democrats, so that there's a lot of new people might not be as familiar with this issue. So the Coalition for Safe Roads is an important area. And, you know, donations for, like, different funds to help people.
Well, Christine, we're running out of time, unfortunately. I really want to thank you and all the work you're doing at Voces de la Frontera. We'll be right back on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Thanks, Christine.
Thank you. Their money,
then wait back again. My father's own father, he waded that river. Others before him have done just the same. They died in the hills and they died in the valley. Some went to heaven without any name.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never die, said he. I never die, said he.
Hey, Matt Rothschild here. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie's off today. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network all across the great state of Wisconsin and around the world on the World Wide Web. I'm joined by my usual guest host, Angela Lang of Block, and excited to introduce to you one of the leading intellectuals on the left over the last many decades. His name is Bill Fletcher Jr. Bill is a talk show host, a writer, an activist, and a trade unionist. He's got a couple novels out. He's also the co-author of a book called Solitary Divided, and the author of They're Bankrupting Us, 20 Other Myths About Unions. Big union activist, and he's been writing recently after the election about the really important issue of Trump and fascism and how we overcome it. So why don't we just start, Bill, because I think this is the crucial question, but just for a little background, how do you explain the disaster that happened on November 5th?
So thanks, Matt, and thanks, Angela. Good to be on board with both of you. So my starting point, Matt, is very different from others, many others. I don't think that there was one explanation. I think that there were multiple things. I think it was a perfect storm. And so that's one of the reasons I was very angry with Bernie Sanders' response after the election, where he dumped the whole thing as about economics. And it's not. I mean, it's like there is certainly an economic component. Every incumbent administration that went through the COVID period has suffered losses, except in Mexico. The issue of inflation certainly was something that people were, it was very hard to run against. And no incumbent in the US history has ever successfully run for re-election when there was inflation. So we had those factors. But in addition to that, I think it's important to understand that a political current has been developing for years, which came together as what we know as MAGA. And so we have the revanchism, as they would say in Europe, the politics of revenge and resentment. We have the racism. We had misogyny dripping from the banners of the Republican Party. And all of these came together to speak to a lot of anger that's out there, a lot of what I'm calling the COVID PTSD, the whole experience of COVID and what that meant for many people, all of these things. And there were certainly mistakes on the part of the Harris campaign, both tactical and strategic. But the one thing that I would say that was missing from her argument was that the economic problem was not only about inflation. It was the result of 50 years of neoliberal globalization. Mm-hmm. And so to me, it's sort of like if you imagine water saturated with salt. And then you add a little bit more salt and you really stir it up. You super saturate it and it still looks like it's clear. And then you drop one grain of salt into the water and all of it falls to the bottom. That one grain of salt was inflation and COVID. That one grain of salt fell into the water and everything dropped. And people started feeling the results of 50 years of neoliberal globalization. That is what Harris should have been talking about.
And Vance played on that too by saying, look, at the Democrats brought you these free trade deals and people got screwed by them. And so it was kind of a flip.
But it was disingenuous. See, that's the thing that really, really gets to me, right? And which is why it doesn't make any sense for anybody to leave the Democratic Party and go to the Republican Party looking for any kind of economic justice. Neoliberalism was fully introduced into the United States by the Reagan administration. Last time I checked my history books, he was a Republican. His entire administration was advancing neoliberal globalization. The Democratic Party was late in showing up, but it was led by Bill Clinton in moving in that direction. So at a certain point, both parties fully embraced neoliberal globalization, and that's true. But it was the Republicans that really shattered the wall on this. And so when you have someone like Vance, I mean, it's completely disingenuous, you know, making those cries. It was the Republicans who were constantly advancing that, who were constantly advancing takeaways, and who are now once again debating reducing Medicaid, threatening Medicare, and other things. They're back to the same old gimmicks.
Now, you've been writing about Trump and the fascist movement. It's not just Trump, and it's not just Vance, and it's not just, right, you know, a handful of people. Fascism is a mass movement, and that's Trump, right, has a mass base. I'm wondering, what percentage of Trump voters do you think are in that fascist movement?
I would put it like this. When I look at U.S. history, there seems to be among the electorate somewhere between 25% and 30% that consistently are reactionary.
Ooh, that's high.
Yeah, it is. But the positive side is it means 75% of us are sane, even if we don't necessarily agree. And I think that's what we have to deal with. I think that one of the mistakes, Matt, that has happened on the left, and we saw it with the Occupy movement, was the notion of the 1% against the 99%. It led many of us to believe incorrectly that there really was no social base to the oligarchs, and that it was really us against the oligarchs, as opposed to understanding that the oligarchs have a very significant social base. And that social base is complicated because that social base is not an instrument of the oligarchs. It's a social base that sometimes unites with the oligarchs and sometimes is angry with the oligarchs.
So who is Vance, in that social base?
Well, let me just say something about Vance because it helps us understand this. So Vance gives this whole anti-elite thing, But if you listen to Vance, this is what he's saying. He's saying, I'm angry. I'm angry as hell. Why? Because you all wouldn't let me in. He's not saying that the elite is itself a problem. He's saying, I'm angry because you would not let me in. And that is what that then translates down to the base, where you have masses of people, mainly in the middle strata of the economy, who are feeling crushed by the rich and fearful of the poor. And they feel like they're losing out on the American dream. And they want to do something, and they are inspired by right-wing populism and by fascism. That's what I think we're up against. It's not mainly, and this is interesting because you have all of this stuff in the mainstream media about white workers this, white workers that. The MAGA movement, just like the Tea Party movement, its fundamental social base wasn't among workers. It was among middle strata. It was more skilled trades. It was more small business people, as well as the wealthy. And so this is something that gets misled, because in the media they say, well, a definition of class is whether you've graduated from college, which is BS. You've got all these small business people who graduated from high school, particularly white folks. And so it's not, that doesn't describe what we're up against.
So we're up against this fascist movement with a fascist leader in the White House. How do we respond? That's the crucial issue. And then, Angela, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Okay, so quickly, how do we respond? The first thing that we have to do is get away from mourning and despair. That there's been, that yes, we got our asses kicked on November 5th. Okay, fine. Now, get over it, right? The next thing is that we need to begin thinking about how to move forward. And central to moving forward, Matt and Angela, is the idea of united fronts, that we need to unite the various forces that have no interest in a MAGA future. And we need to be prepared for a variety of defensive battles as well as some offensive battles. So by defensive battles, I mean, among other things, protecting migrants, both documented and undocumented, who are subject to being rounded up. The MAGA forces have increasingly over the fall talked about not going after just undocumented, but they've used this term remigration. You may have heard it. That was a term that these European fascists have invented for ethnic cleansing. We have to be prepared to protect migrants. We have to be prepared to provide legal assistance as well as mobilizing, much like the unemployed councils did in the 30s when people were being evicted. We're going to have to show up in force and to block that. So that's one of the things that's going to be important that we undertake. Another thing that's going to be happening is it's going to be an attack on a federal workforce. And federal unions, like the American Federation of Government Employees and others, need to have a mobilizing counter strategy. Now, that is antithetical to the way most of these unions in the federal sector have operated. But they're going to need to mobilize, and they're going to need to talk with the larger public about what the Project 2025, now Trump agenda, is going to be in terms of possibly eliminating 30% of the federal workforce and replacing them with appointees, right? So that's a second defensive battle. There's plenty of others, but let me say something about the offensive. I would argue that the Achilles heel of the far right is the environment. They don't have a response on the environment outside of genocide. And it's really important that the environmental movement move outside of Washington, D.C., and really start talking to people about responding to the environmental challenges. And I don't mean just simply recycling material. I mean, for example, these superstorms that have hit us, the superstorms are indicative of what we're going to be seeing in the coming years. But the other part of it is that the hollowing out of our social systems and our social net has meant that people have to survive on their own, whether it was right, whether it was the result of COVID or whether it's a result of superstorms. The right has no response to that. The environmental movement does impart and should have more. And so we need to be plowing ahead around issues of the environment, around environmental devastation, around what that means in terms of rebuilding healthcare, rebuilding social care, et cetera. That's where I think we can win right now. That to me is comparable to Doolittle's raid on Tokyo in 1942. We've got to shake up the other side and show people they are not invincible and we can actually kick them in their rear.
We need certainly to do something to get our spirits back up and to show that we're just not taking it lying down. That's right. You know, people are so devastated after November 5th. So I think that's really good advice. Angela, I'm going to throw it over to you as soon as we come back from this break, because I want you to engage with Bill Fletcher here and tease him out a little more on how we defeat fascism. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm subbing in for Maggie Dawn today. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. And we're going to be back here in just a little bit to pick up this conversation with Bill Fletcher Jr. Bill Fletcher Jr. Is one of the leading left-wing activists and intellectuals in the country over the last several decades. And he's got a lot of important things to say on how we need to move forward and counter this reactionary phase. We'll be right back. They shot you, Joseph's eye. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe. I didn't die, says Joe. I didn't die. And standing there as big as smiling with his eyes, says Joe.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
All from the Indians, welcome to Pilgrims and to the Buffaloes. Once rule a plane, like the vultures circling beneath the dark clouds, looking for the rain.
Hey, Matt Rothschild with you. That's a little Gil Scott Heron for you. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Our guest this afternoon for the next little bit is Bill Fletcher Jr., a leading trade union activist and intellectual on the left. My guest host, as usual, is Angela Lang of Block. And I'm going to turn it over to you, Angela, to engage in conversation with Bill right now.
Yeah, first of all, thanks, Bill, for being here. I think there's so much to learn. And I was very excited to get to pick your brain a little bit. One thing, full disclosure, is my first job out of college was for SEIU, the Service Employees International Union. And that was roughly a little over 10 years ago. So I saw the right to work fight when I was there. And it was a little bit after Scott Walker's election and Act 10. And understanding, I think in Wisconsin, being so polarized, we knew there was one side or another. There was a very clear villain. There was a very clear enemy to workers in Wisconsin. And so I'm thinking about since that time, since Scott Walker was elected, how the Dems haven't been able to land an economic message, knowing that they are the party of unions, pro-worker, raising the minimum wage, paid sick days, things like that. That's what they're known for. And Republicans are very much not known for those policies. Why is it that the Democrats can't seem to connect what they stand for with the working class?
I think that there's a few different responses to that, Angela. So let me start with something about the Harris campaign and then work backwards. What's interesting is the allegations around that some people made about Harris, claiming that she wasn't talking about the economy, ignored her proposals. Like there was this article by this guy, Michael Barrebe, in New Lines magazine that identified her discussions about child tax credits, earned income tax credits, subsidies for first-time home buyers, incentives for building affordable housing, all of the things that you and I would talk about that would be directly aimed at the working class. I think that part of what happened was, at least in the Harris campaign, there was a mistake of expecting that there would be enough of a splintering of the Republican Party to result in a victory. And I think that that was a mistake, it was a big mistake. I think that the second thing is that the Democratic Party, although it has been the party which unions and workers have generally rallied to, has always been a capitalist party. It is not an anti-capitalist party. And so, and it is actually not a political party. It's really an alliance. And that's what many people miss, that there's in some ways five or six parties within the Democratic Party. And the pro-worker element, the element that I would identify with people like AOC, is a segment, it's a minority, and that the dominant force is a force that is pro-capitalist and has a very ambivalent relationship with the wealthy. And they also do not want to, they only want to upset the apple cart, but so much. Which means that it's people like us that have to be pushing in order to bring about the kind of change that we need to have happen. When we don't, which was a big mistake under Obama, when we thought, oh, we got the brother in, he's going to do the right thing, that was a fundamental mistake. Yeah. And so I think that's part of what it is, Angela, the sort of gravitating back towards hoping that they can find some sort of normality. And it's wrong strategically. We need a different kind of approach.
I agree. I think there's a lot of times, you know, we talk about on the left building a multiracial working class movement. But how do we do that? Understanding that there are folks that are a part of a union that still voted for Trump at the end of the day. That's what right. does that look like? So yeah, thank you for that. And I think there's just more to digest and to chew on, but thank you.
Oh, I'd love to get into that question. I mean, if we had time, I mean, that's what I obsess on.
Yeah.
And I used to work for SEIU as well.
So Bill, we're going to have to get you back here on Civic Media Radio Network. And I'll try to do that because we should dig into that issue a little more. Bill Fletcher is a writer, activist, trade unionist, a really leading intellectual on the left. Really appreciate you spending this half hour with us, Bill.
It's absolutely my pleasure. You take care and stay safe.
Yeah.
Thank you. Be well.
You as well. Have a nice weekend. Okay, you're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Matt Rothschild. She's Angela Lang. We'll be back in just a little bit with a different guest from a different party, actually. Yes. Former Governor Scott McCallum, Republican, will be joining us right after the break. So I hope you will tune in and you can join the conversation. 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. And we'll be right back. Thanks for listening to us this afternoon, this gray Wisconsin afternoon.
And now it's a winter. Winter in America. Yes, and all of the hillers have been killed. Sent away. Yeah, but the people know it's winter. Winter in America.
the national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.